and welcome to Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. This is volume 44, number 38, brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. It's published on Friday, the 20th of September, 2024. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreader Desney. And in the news this week, the dentist problem in the area is dire. Blue badge abusers banged to rights. And a huge flock of ducks are expected at the waterways on Sunday. All this coming your way during the next hour and a half in a big week for news. Birthday wishes coming up after the first part of the news with Desney.
This is Desney, your newsreader for the week. We've done a bit of a swap, so I'm back earlier than I thought I'd be. However, let's have some news. 5G tower. A 20-metre tall 5G mast could be built next to the James Paget University Hospital after plans were given the green light. Agent Perry Williams Limited submitted the application on behalf of the applicant, Cornerstone, to build the tower, which will have 6 supporting antennas on land next to car park F at the hospital in Lowestoft Road, Galston. A 2-metre fence will be built around the tower. Documents submitted say the tower will deliver public benefit in terms of the mobile services. It adds that 5G has the potential to transform the way we live and improve economic productivity. Additionally, the document states that local authorities across Britain will share collectively an annual £2.35 billion of efficiency savings by supporting 5G. Great Yarmouth Borough Council said that the development must begin within 5 years of the application being approved. The applicant, Cornerstone, is one of the UK's leading mobile infrastructure services, which manages and owns over 20,000 sites across the country. Haddiscoe Island Mill revamp approved. Now, I know Margaret read something about this, so perhaps this is an update or a different part of the story. A couple's dream home restoration was nearly derailed due to officials worrying they could be at risk of harm. But plans to restore a derelict windmill in the Broads and build an off-grid home next door, all in a high-risk flood zone, have now been approved thanks to some ingenious plans and a novel escape route. Jill and Adam Singer want to bring Toff Monk's Mill on South Norfolk Haddiscoe Island back into working order. They also plan to live in an adjacent eco-home which will be powered by solar energy. But their ambitions faced opposition from the Environment Agency, EA, who complained that the dwelling would be located on land at the highest flood risk level and therefore would pose a risk to safety. At a Broads Authority, BA, planning committee meeting this week, the couple defended their scheme. The Singers intend to build the 2-bed single-storey home on stilts to protect it against flooding. They also hope to build a raised walkway to the windmill to provide a place of refuge in the event of a flood. This was given support by officers at the BA, who praised the innovative design and welcomed the fact that the Grade 2 listed wind pump, built in the 19th century, will be restored as part of the plans. But there were still concerns that a rapid flood event could leave them in danger. However, the Singers said they intended to keep a small dinghy tied up to their home so that in the event of a flood, they would at least have this method of escape. Harry Blathwaite, chairman of the BA, approved of this means of escape, saying, "It is rather like Noah. members voted unanimously to approve the scheme, calling it an exceptional case, highlighting the heritage benefits it would bring, and deciding the flood evacuation plans of the couple would keep them safe. In court over blue badges, people have been warned not to abuse blue badges for disabled people after council officers took 13 people to court over reported misuse of the permits. Warnings were also issued to dozens, and blue badges were destroyed because they had been wrongly used. Norfolk County Council's Blue Badge Investigations Officer helped get 13 people taken to court in 2023-24, of whom 6 were successfully prosecuted. Among those prosecuted were a woman who used a blue badge issued to her father but reported as lost to park on yellow lines in Dereham. She was convicted at Norwich Magistrates Court in September and had to pay £1,849.71. A driver who parked on a yellow line in Market Gates in Great Yarmouth in December last year, using a disabled person's blue badge which was not theirs, they had to pay £190 after they were convicted at the town's magistrates' court in July. A man used a blue badge issued to his wife to park in Church Road, Hofton, in November last year. He had to pay £960 after he was convicted at Norwich Magistrates Court last month. Another man used a blue badge issued to his mother to park in a pay-and-display parking bay in Oak Street, Norwich, in October last year. They were ordered to pay £1,653.48 after appearing before city magistrates. And a woman used her father's blue badge to park on yellow lines in Tanner Street in Thetford last August. That landed her in Norwich Magistrates Court in June, where she was ordered to pay £1,321.68. The council also issued 34 verbal or written warnings about misuse and seized 23 badges. 11 were then destroyed. More than 35,000 valid badges are held across the county, permitting holders to park on single or double yellow lines for up to 3 hours in vehicles they are driving or travelling in. Holders can also park for free in areas with on-street parking meters and pay-and-display machines. They can also park for free in on-street disabled parking bays. The County Council received 98 reports of misuse in 2023-24, up 1 on the previous year. Officers said blue badge prosecutions served as a deterrent to misuse. And Graham Plant, the Conservative-controlled Council's Cabinet Member for Highways, Infrastructure and Transport, said there were social benefits in pursuing offenders. A suspected unexploded bomb found on a Norfolk beach has been washed back to sea. Last Friday, police and bomb experts were called to Hemsby Beach after the discovery of the suspected explosive device by a member of the public. However, Norfolk police have said that the disposal unit team summoned to the scene was unable to locate the suspected explosive device as it had been washed away with the tide. A spokeswoman for the force said, "We were called to Hemsby Beach at 10:20 a.m. on Friday, September the 13th, by a member of the public who found an item on the shoreline believed to be an unexploded ordnance device. The item was underwater again due to the tide coming in. The cordon was put in place for safety reasons until the Navy EOD attended. Following a search by the Navy EOD, the item was no longer at the site, so the expectation is this has moved elsewhere with the tide. A Norfolk boat hire company has increased its booking capacity after taking over one of the oldest boating businesses on the Broads. Last month, Horning Pleasure Craft bought Broom Boats, which was based in Brundle for 125 years, acquiring its fleet of 32 boats ranging from small vessels to luxury cruisers. The purchase, which included the village's White Heron pub, increased Horning Pleasure Craft's moorings by 40%. Husband and wife Clive and Victoria Richardson operate Horning Marina on the River Bure and Cove Marina in Brundle on the Yare. Mr. Richardson, co-founder of Horning Pleasure Craft, said, "Boating has been in my family for 5 generations, and that's what inspired me to start this business with my wife Victoria. We're well aware of the long-standing history Broom Boats has in the local boating community, which is why we're thrilled to welcome them into the fold. Opportunities like this don't come very often along the Broads, so when it did, we knew it was one we couldn't let pass by. Not only will it let us grow our business, but it also means we can play a role in keeping a historic business and its boat building knowledge alive so it can continue to be a part of the local community. Broom Boats was founded in 1898 by the Broom family. The business began as a boat builder before operating a hire fleet from 1912. It was involved in both world wars, building vessels for the Admiralty and helping in the Dunkirk evacuations in 1940. Broom Boats was put up for sale earlier this year after its owners decided they wanted to focus on their other company, a strategic land and property development business. New roadside surveillance cameras to catch motorists committing traffic offences on Norfolk streets will be up and running within months. The cameras will detect drivers committing what are known as moving traffic offences, such as ignoring bans on turning, going into bus lanes or down pedestrianised streets. Conservative-controlled Norfolk County Council announced plans to install the cameras more than 2 years ago and carried out public consultation over the move. County Hall has confirmed the first cameras will go live in the coming months. A council spokesman said, "Norfolk County Council still intends to begin enforcement in locations previously consulted on. Our contractors are in the process of getting the technology on the sites ready for use. We expect these sites to become operational over the next few months." Until a recent law change, Norfolk motorists committing such offences could only be caught by police officers. But the previous government announced councils would be given powers to issue £70 penalty notices to drivers it caught, and County Hall secured permission to do so. Previous council papers stated that would bring in £250,000 in fines between 2024 and 2027. The first cameras are earmarked for Norwich and Great Yarmouth, and the council said other locations could follow in future years. When the plans were announced, Simon Williams, head of policy at the RAC, said, "It is plain wrong that the council thinks it can raise £250,000 from moving traffic offences. The only way such high amounts can be generated is if drivers aren't given adequate advanced warning of when bus lanes are in operation or where bus gates are. The council has said for the first 6 months, drivers would get warning letters for the first offence and fined for subsequent ones. There would be immediate fines after they have been in place for 6 months. The Norwich streets are Gentleman's Walk, Carrow Road and King Street, and in Great Yarmouth, Regent Road would be covered, which is a pedestrian zone with access for loading only during quieter periods of the day. New parliamentary findings have revealed that more than half of the county's children are going without basic dental care. Research by the House of Commons Library found that 57.3% of children in Norfolk had not seen an NHS dentist in the past year. The county was one of 33 local authority areas across the country where more than half of the children had not seen a dentist, with the London Borough of Hackney topping the list at 62.2%. With 5.3 million children affected, the findings were published by the Liberal Democrats at their autumn conference in Brighton. Deputy Leader Daisy Cooper called for an emergency dental registration scheme for children. "It's a scandal that across the country, millions of children are going without basic dental care," Ms. Cooper said. "The previous Conservative government mismanaged NHS dentistry so badly that they presided over underspends in the dentistry budget while children's teeth were left to rot. This appalling situation cannot go on, and we are calling for an emergency registration scheme so that children who are eligible for free checkups can actually access them, and for reform of the broken dental contract to bring more dentists back to the NHS and end the scandal of dental deserts. According to the NHS, patients with good oral health will probably need to attend only once every 12 to 24 months, but those with more problems will need checkups more often. Norwich has been described as a dental desert, where demand for the NHS services far outstrips supply. Last year, a survey found that Norfolk's five-year-olds have the highest prevalence of dental decay in the east of England, with the King's Lynn and West Norfolk area among the worst affected in the country. Other statistics show that more than 1,000 people had to attend Norfolk's A&E departments for dental care in 2023 because their health issues were so serious. Local NHS bosses say efforts are being made to address the shortages. It may not have fired the public imagination, but the prospect of devolution was a tantalising one for business and political leaders. So what now after the deal was killed off by ministers? Norfolk and Suffolk's multi-million pound devolution plans fell through last week after the Labour government pulled the plug on lucrative deals for both counties. The deals would have put more power into the hands of local leaders. With both county councils each getting their own directly elected leader with greater control to build homes, infrastructure and create jobs. Norfolk's £600 million county deal included an investment fund of £20 million a year for 30 years, whereas Suffolk's £480 million deal was worth £16 million a year. But the new Labour government has scrapped both deals, with the party not in favour of plans for directly elected county council leaders, preferring a mayoral model with a leader separate from the council. The collapse of the deal means hundreds of millions of pounds of future investment in the region has been lost, casting doubt on major projects. Norfolk's county deal was agreed in principle in December 2022. Kay Mason Billig, leader of Norfolk County Council, said schemes now at risk include the redevelopment of Norwich's Anglia Square, the new UEA Dentistry School, Hethel Engineering Hub, Scotto Enterprise Park, Attleborough Railway Station redevelopment and the Gnar Ouse regeneration area. All of this has effectively been put in the bin, and we've now got to go back to square one to see what crumbs we can salvage, she said. We were looking at $600 million over 30 years. We could have used that money to invest in infrastructure, bringing new industry and jobs and more prosperity for people in Norfolk. We were going to get a £7 million brownfield development fund to bring brownfield sites up to scratch for housing. On top of that, there was the adults' skills budget, which was £12 million a year. We were due to take that over from September 2025. That is now in jeopardy as well. We don't know what is going to happen, as it was part of our devolution deal. The adult skills budget was always devised centrally, so we never knew who those providers were, and we had no say in the training that was being offered for higher education. Under the deal, we got to see who the providers were, and it meant we could tailor the skills, courses and training offered to our residents for the skills they need. We would have a much higher skilled workforce, and it would stop a lot of younger people from leaving the county to get training because it is not available locally and then never coming back. However, Mike Stonard, leader of Norfolk City Council, which plans to buy Anglia Square, said Mrs. Mason Billig's claim that the revamp of the shopping centre is now under threat is not true. Our plans to buy Anglia Square are completely independent of the devolution deal, he said. Any suggestions that proposals to redevelop the site are now all of a sudden at risk are completely inaccurate and misleading. We are continuing with our plans to look at buying the site so we can shape the future of Anglia Square in the interests of all our local communities and businesses. The government has left the door open for a new package to be negotiated, but this could be a cross-county deal jointly involving Norfolk and Suffolk. Alistair Beals, King's Lynn and West Norfolk Borough Council leader, said Norfolk's deal also included almost £2 million of immediate funding this year for King's Lynn Enterprise Park and the College of West Anglia's School of Nursing Studies. This is very disappointing news for West Norfolk and Norfolk more widely, he said. We have also been working hard on developing a pipeline of transformational projects for the borough, which has planned to be delivered through securing the devolution funding in future years, and we are reviewing the impact that this decision will have on delivery. The region's business community has expressed its disappointment with the decision. Nova Fairbank, chief executive at Norfolk Chambers of Commerce, said businesses were poised to capitalise on the certainty of investment that devolution would bring to our region. Devolution would have clearly stated that the government understood the capability of Norfolk to successfully deliver economic growth, housing, jobs and skills, and would have provided certainty and stability for Norfolk businesses to commit on their own investment decisions, she said. In short, Norfolk would absolutely have been open for business. Devolution for Norfolk had strong backing from residents and businesses alike. Now we are all left with huge frustration and complete uncertainty. We would strongly urge the government to reconsider and award Norfolk the devolution funding that it deserves. A Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government spokesman said, "This government strongly believes that mayors should have a unique role, while council leaders must continue to focus on the delivery of the essential services. We want to see those two functions kept separate, as this benefits the community and its people, which is why we will not be proceeding with the single local authority mayoral deals proposed in Norfolk and Suffolk." Steve Morphew, leader of Norfolk County Council's Labour group, said, "Nobody should be mourning what was always a second-rate deal that would have consigned us to being a second-rate county, always playing catch-up." It is not the first time that a devolution deal in the East has fallen through. A previous Norfolk-Suffolk deal collapsed in 2016 after a string of Norfolk councils withdrew from the process and West Norfolk Council voted against it. Mrs. Mason Billig said she has not given up hope that a new deal can be negotiated. "We're now going to have to wait at least 2 years to put anything else together to move forward again," she said. "I've not given up. I'm not that sort of person to give up and say that's the end of it, because it isn't. The minister has now written to me to say he will have a meeting with me, which is a positive step. What I will do is see what we can salvage from this."
Well, much more news in a very short period of time. But first, it's time for the birthdays, with very many happy returns to Rodley Wheatley for this coming Sunday, the 22nd. We hope you have a great day, Rodney. OK, as I mentioned, we've a huge amount of news stories this week. So without further ado, it's back to Desney for the second collection of your local stories, followed closely by her look at the coming week's TV.
How Dungeon Corner got its name. It is a popular, if remote, spot on the Norfolk Broads with an intriguing name. For decades, boaters, anglers and ramblers have debated the origins of Dungeon Corner to describe a picturesque bend where the Thurn makes an abrupt 90-degree turn. The area near the village of Martham is surrounded by marshland with no obvious features to give a clue to its mysterious title, and certainly no evidence of dungeons. But locals have now revealed the origin of the name. They say it refers to a former use of the site, though nothing that relates to an underground prison. David Seller, 74, who lives nearby and regularly walks to Dungeon Corner, said, "It is a medieval term for meadow by the water, which has been corrupted into Dungeon Corner. It's a very lovely section, a great place to moor up, have a picnic, do some fishing. And it is a somewhat secret location too." By the 11th century, the marshes at Martham had dried out sufficiently for the area to become valuable haymaking meadows where sheep grazed. Bullocks were used for ploughing, and along with cows were taken to the meadows to fatten. In the 13th century, on each side of the River Thurn were hay meadows, apart from a poor quality waterlogged scrubland which was known as Dunsin. Over the years, this became the more memorable dungeon, as it remains. The spot close to Martham Broad is one of the quietest on the Norfolk Broads, because many boats are unable to reach it as they are too large to pass beneath the nearby bridge at Potterhyam. But Dungeon Corner has near legendary status among fishermen. John Bailey, one of Britain's best known anglers, has named it as one of his favourite spots, describing it as a broadland paradise, which is enthralling and enlightening and a joy. It is also thought to be close to the location of the fictional Roaring Donkey Pub from Arthur Ransom's children's classic The Big Six, where the crew of the Death and Glory take an enormous pike they have caught nearby. The reason for the tight bend is thought to be because the original course of the Thurn continued in a straight line, along a now unnavigable waterway known as Hundred Stream, until it flowed out to sea between Winterton and Horsey. At some point, the river changed direction, and it now flows down to the Bure at Thurn Mouth. From Dungeon Corner, it goes into the nearby Martham Broad and West Somerton, the head of navigation. The area around Dungeon Corner has a mysterious air that is only partly down to its odd name. There are also tantalising, though widely debunked, reports that the remote area on the opposite bank was used during the Second World War as a secret airfield for ferrying undercover agents into occupied Europe. Well, there's a thing. Nature Reserve opens in Norfolk. Off the A47, down a narrow, winding track, is one of the most important but vulnerable landscapes in the UK. The Halvergate Marshes is an area of grazing marsh crisscrossed by a network of dikes and drainage ditches between the River Yare and the River Bure. The area near Great Yarmouth is a vital migration point for birds during the autumn and is also home to the internationally significant species, including the Bewick swan. Over the past 2 years, excavators have been working the land there, forming new dikes and digging shallow ponds to create a new wetland habitat for birds and other wildlife. The reserve, called Loughlin's Marsh, was officially opened on Tuesday, September the 17th, and already it has seen an increase in the number of birds such as redshanks, lapwings and common terns. Michael Copleston, the England director of the RSPB, said the area was stunning and hugely significant. If you build it, they will come. More than 10,000 ducks and geese are already using this area, he said. Going back 30 years, there were no breeding waders here. Now there are 300 pairs. Tim Strudwick, senior sites manager, Mid-Yare, Sutton Fen, Burney Marches and Breydon Water Reserves, RSPB, said the creation of RSPB Loughlin's Marsh will play a vital role in improving the resilience of this unique wetland landscape against the impacts of climate change. The management and maintenance of Loughlin's Marsh will be overseen by the Broad Drainage Board and the RSPB, who also manage the adjacent Burney Marshes and Breydon Water Reserve, which Loughlin's Marsh will now be a part of. The project, which began in July 2023, was a collaboration between National Highways, the RSPB and the Broad's Internal Drainage Board. Loughlin's Marsh was acquired by the RSPB in 2016 and named in memory of Ralph Loughlin. Mr. Loughlin had worked on RSPB Burney Marshes for more than 20 years and had a lifelong connection with the land and its birds. The fresh water, which now flows in the new reserve, is sourced from the tidal River Bure through a controlled inlet at the Stracey Arms drainage mill. The water flows for 3 kilometres along a high-level carrier or a network of artificially raised watercourses which transfer and hold fresh water around the Halvergate Marshes. The water is also used as a reliable supply of drinking water for grazing animals. The high-level carrier means the Broads IDB can provide a reliable supply of fresh water to the area. Without it, the Halvergate Marshes would likely degrade, as they are extremely flat and low-lying, with much of the area at or below sea level, meaning it is particularly vulnerable to climate change. The area is sparsely populated and home to Burney Arms Railway Station, one of the most isolated railway stations in England. The marshes themselves are nationally and internationally important wetland habitats for many species. At the same time, the area is important to the local economy, as it has good quality arable and grazing farmland. Changes to three Galston and Great Yarmouth pubs. Two pubs that had been serving customers for 150 years in Yarmouth and Galston could vanish forever if plans to transform them are approved. The tramway in Galston is set to be turned into an Indian restaurant, while developers want to turn the Great Eastern in Yarmouth into flats. It follows both pubs shutting to customers in the last 3 years. A third pub, the Winners, in South Beach Parade, is also set to be turned into office and warehouse space and three holiday lets if plans are approved. The bids come amid a rapid decline nationwide in the number of pubs in the country, with 80 closing a month, according to government figures. Great Yarmouth Borough Council Planning Committee will meet next week to discuss the proposals, with both schemes recommended for approval by officers. The tramway in Lowestoft Road, named after the horse-drawn tramway that linked Yarmouth to its southern neighbour, had been visited by customers since it opened in 1875. 60 years later, the route closed, but its legacy lives on through the pub. In 2021, the pub was stripped of its 4 a.m. licence after video evidence backed up complaints from neighbours of late-night noise and revelry spilling out onto the streets. Now the owners of the site want to transform it into an Indian restaurant and takeaway. Great Yarmouth Council officials have decided that the loss of the pub is acceptable, as the community is still well served by the nearby Feathers. It is hoped turning the pub into a restaurant will keep people visiting the High Street. The Great Eastern in Nelson Road Central is well known in the town due to its traditional facade with colourful wooden panelling. It is thought to have been built in 1870. And was in business for more than 150 years, later becoming known as the Party Pub, until it shut in February this year, and the owners blamed electrical issues for closing its doors. According to officers, the pub is in a poor condition, and it requires £30,000 in repairs to bring it back into use. Developers now want to turn it into a block of four one-bed flats. Despite being threatened with losing their local, people living nearby have not objected to the plans. Fortunately for pubgoers, the Albion, located opposite, is still open. Officers have recommended the scheme is approved, with the final decision to be made by councillors on September the 18th. Changes to a third former pub are also due to go before the planning committee next week. The former Winners public house in South Beach Parade in Yarmouth could be turned into three holiday lets and also a storage space if plans are approved. Officers have recommended councillors give the green light for the scheme, believing it is not necessary to retain the pub as a community asset. The loss of the tramway and Great Eastern as pubs is reflective of a national trend. Government figures show about 80 pubs a month are vanishing across the country, with nearly 500 calling last orders between April 2023 and March 2024. Other well-known pubs that have been lost in the area include the Iron Duke, which is being restored by the team behind Zack's, a chain of American-themed restaurants in Norfolk. Peggotty's in King Street in the town also shut recently after a licence review forced it to stop serving customers at 1 a.m. rather than their previous 4 a.m. closing time. Police are appealing for information after two puppies were stolen from a home in Great Yarmouth. The incident is believed to have taken place between 11 p.m. on Tuesday night and 6 a.m. on Wednesday morning from a house in Tennyson Road. The puppies stolen are two 15-week-old Staffordshire Bull Terrier puppies, one male and one female. As well as the puppies, door keys to the property were also taken. Anyone with information is urged to contact Norfolk Police. An advertising agency is fighting a council's refusal of its bid to display billboards in Great Yarmouth. Global Outdoor Media Limited, based in London, wants to continue to display five illuminated adverts at the corner of Howard Street South and Stonecutters Way. They are more than 3 metres tall and more than 6 metres wide and have been mounted on a fence at the site since 1999. But planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council are now saying that local planning policies have changed since the billboards were last given permission 5 years ago. They said the council is now seeking to improve the townscape in the location, which is part of the Hall Quay and South Quay conservation area. They added that while the character of the area currently has negative aspects, it is improving and the continued presence of the adverts would be harmful for the visual amenity. Global has appealed the rejection to the Planning Inspectorate, government agency which can overturn decisions where it thinks councils have gone against planning law. They are seeking permission for the billboards for another 5 years. Family and friends of a man who died in a car crash are preparing to run a marathon in his honour. The Dan Leathers charity run will take place for the second year in a row on Saturday, September the 21st. The 20-year-old died in hospital following a two-vehicle crash on the A47 in December 2022. Last year, a half marathon, organised by his friends and family, raised more than £17,000 for East Anglian Air Ambulance. This year, they're hoping to raise the same amount for the charity. The 26-mile run will start in Buckenham and pass through the villages of Lingwood, Blowfield, Brundle, Moulton, Cantley, Limpenhoe, Reedham and Freethorpe. It is hoped that the run will finish about 1:30 p.m. at Dan's favourite pub, the King's Head in Lingwood. There will be a raffle and an auction, as well as the performance by Leon Mallett. Members of the Air Ambulance will also be there with a rapid response vehicle. Amanda Leathers, Dan's mother, said that organising the event helps the family cope with the grief. "It keeps us going. It gives us a focus, something positive to concentrate on, rather than the negatives of Dan passing away at 20 years of age." She said if it wasn't for the Air Ambulance, the family would not have got a chance to say their goodbyes to Dan. It would also not have been possible to donate his organs, which saved the lives of five other people, she said. 2 days before Mr. Leathers died, he had been travelling home from work and turning across the road onto the Yarmouth Road at Blowfield when a Range Rover crashed into the side of his Vauxhall Corsa. Last year, an inquest into his death heard that he may have survived had the other motorist been driving to the speed limit. To donate to the event, visit the Dan Leathers page on the website Much Loved. People living in erosion-threatened homes in Hemsby are preparing for 3 days of extremely high spring tides. The village is facing the possibility of more dunes being lost this week as very high tides are predicted to begin to rise on Thursday, peak on Friday and stretch into Saturday. Ian Brennan of campaign group Save Hemsby Coastline said, everyone is absolutely terrified. They can see what's coming, but they can also see that the powers that be haven't stepped up. It's going to be another long winter ahead of us, he added. Over the past week, officers from Great Yarmouth Borough Council have been visiting residents of houses closest to the sea on the Marrams and Fakes Road. The purpose of the visits was to establish an understanding of individual circumstances so the council is able to offer advice and appropriate support for residents who might need it as we move into autumn and winter. Council officers are also collating and adding to their information about such things as water supplies and sewerage in the area. A borough council spokesman said, "Unfortunately, the dunes in Hemsby are vulnerable to continued erosion, and as we approach the winter, we want to do all we can to help our residents who might be affected. Wherever possible, we are in dialogue with those whose homes might be at risk and will look to provide advice and support around issues such as housing and safety. The safety of our residents remains our number one priority in a location which is seeing the all too real impact of coastal erosion," the spokesperson added. A total of 25 homes in Hemsby have been lost over the past 11 years due to coastal erosion. The village was granted a licence for a 1.3-kilometre long rock berm last year, but was turned down for government funding as the £15 million scheme would only qualify where hundreds of homes are at risk. However, campaigners have argued a criteria change was needed due to the almost £100 million that the resort generates each year for the Borough of Great Yarmouth. In January, Environment Secretary Steve Reid, then the Shadow Secretary, pledged a Labour government would open the door for funding sea defences in Hemsby. And on Monday, September the 16th, Mr Brennan said campaigners are still pinning their hopes on Mr Reid. Mr Brennan predicted that another 4 or 5 houses on the Marrams will likely go in the next storm. In a related development, the Sir David Ames UK Children's Parliament for primary age students held a Cobra-style meeting on Saturday, September the 14th in Hemsby. The children grilled members of the Borough Council and Norfolk County Council, Save Hemsby Coastline, Hemsby Independent Lifeboat and 2 former residents of the Marrams, Kevin Jordan and Lance Martin, who have been made homeless because of coastal erosion. Clark Dearson, 11, the Children's Parliament Prime Minister, said, "It's clear that there's a very real and immediate problem that is life-changing for the communities in this and the surrounding areas. If nothing is done, it could, at best, forever change the lives of many local people and the local economy, and at worst could result in a substantial loss of life." A football club chairman has expressed anger and disappointment as mindless vandals cut holes into the nets of brand new goals. The goals at Hemsby Football Club are used by under-13s and under-14s football teams. It is the second time in as many weeks that club facilities have been damaged by vandals. When the parents, players and club officials arrived on Sunday morning for the youth team fixtures, they were horrified to see the damage. Hemsby Football Club chairman Ben Chilvers said, "It is really annoying. We got these lovely brand new goals for the youth teams at the end of August. We're so upset that this has happened. The season has only just started and we already have to replace the damaged nets and straps. I don't know why anyone would do this, as it spoils the fun for everyone. It is mindless vandalism and disheartening. I really hope this doesn't happen again." The football club has reported the vandalism to police, who are investigating. The club is also appealing for businesses to come forward to sponsor them for the season. Email secretaryhemsbyfc@outlook.com. A road closure due to a burst water pipe in Caister is causing widespread disruption as contractors battle to fix it. Crews from Essex and Suffolk Water worked overnight on Saturday to try and fix the damaged pipe in St Julian Road. Cones were put out for the safety of the public and the workmen, though it is said that these were moved by locals, resulting in chaos. In a post shared on Facebook, Caister Parish Council said disruption is widespread from the work. Now, to address the situation, the water company has fully closed the road and there's still no date for when it will be reopened. A spokesman for Essex and Suffolk Water said, "Our crew worked through Saturday night into Sunday morning to repair a burst pipe after a leak was reported in St Julian Road in Caister-on-Sea. The road had to be closed and diversions put in place so that the team could work safely and is due to reopen in the next few days. We apologise for any inconvenience caused and thank drivers for their patience and understanding." Well, this week there are quite a few old favourites in our television schedule returning for another season. And of course, you might know already if you're a Strictly fan that Strictly began last week with their launch show where all the 15 celebrities met their partners for this season, the professional dance partners. Now, you might think those 15 celebrities are not all celebrities at the moment. Yes, I'm inclined to agree. But I'm sure that within the next few weeks, they'll all become really old favourites of ours. And we'll wonder why we didn't know them in the first place. This programme, the first programme in the live programmes, is obviously on Saturday. And some of you I know won't get your sticks in time to learn this. But hopefully you know. Hopefully you watch the launch show if you're a fan. So it might be all over, but nobody will have gone. This is the first week. And the judges will be there to give their comments as usual, but nobody will get voted off. So we'll have a chance to see them all at least twice. This week it starts at 7 p.m. on BBC One and doesn't finish until 9:25. That's how long it takes 15 celebrities and their dance partners all to get a chance to show off their newfound skills. Of course, there'll be a few professional dances in between. But 7 p.m. till 9:25. So if you've got nothing better to do for 2.5 hours on Saturday evening, that's the place for you to be. And one programme that began its return this week, every night, Monday to Friday, 5 episodes this week and 5 more next week, of Davina McCall's programme, My Mum, Your Dad, where grown-up children have nominated their single parent for another chance at love. And it's a dating show where I think there's probably 8, but 1 or 2 new ones get thrown in now and again. So between 8 and 12, I suppose, adults living all together in a country house somewhere, and Davina McCall coming in now and again. But of course, there's the cameras are on them, and somewhere else not far away are the children. Grown-up children, I do assure you, they're grown-up children who are watching their parents begin their new chance at dating. So every evening from 9 o'clock on ITV1 this week, with the final show being on the 10th, and then we'll find out whether anybody really did show signs of having started a promising new relationship. The next programme that's returning will please a lot of people, I know, and that's The Great British Bake Off. It's on Tuesdays on Channel 4 at 8 o'clock. That's 8 p.m. on Tuesdays. And it has a spin-off show called The Great British Bake Off, An Extra Slice, which is on Channel 4 on Thursdays at 8 p.m. So you'll get two chances at this programme if you're a fan of The Great British Bake Off. On Tuesdays, we'll be back with the usual judges there, Prue Leith and Paul Hollywood, and the hosts, who are Alison Hammond and Noel Fielding. And Alison Hammond is also going to be the first guest on the spin-off, fronted by Joe Brand and also helped along by Tom Allen. And Alison Hammond will be amongst the guests as they dissect what has been happening on the show on Tuesday. And also, they have some studio audiences bringing their own cakes in for Tom Allen to comment on and decide how much he approves of them or not. That's usually quite fun. If you enjoy the programme especially, it will be even more fun for you, and that will be on the Thursday night. The next programme that I'm going to tell you about is the one and only newcomer, as far as I know, in this list. And it's called Ludwig, really. It's German. It's Beethoven's first name. That's where they get the title from. Because it stars David Mitchell, and it's about him and his twin brother. He is a reclusive kind. He is a puzzle setter, and under the name Ludwig, his puzzles appear for people to solve in their newspapers or magazines. While his brother, although identical in looks, is a totally different character. And he is an outgoing DCI with Cambridgeshire Police. But when he goes missing, his wife persuades John, who is the Ludwig one, to take his place and find out what has happened to him. So here he is, the puzzle setter, with a real puzzle to solve in real life. He stands in his brother's shoes to do his brother's job without anyone realising that he's really John the puzzle setter, not James the detective. I wonder how long that'll last. Well, it sounds quite promising. David Mitchell is a very funny comedian, and he's appeared in series of comedy dramas before, and we'll have to see how that works out. Should be quite fun. If you want a new programme, that's the one I recommend this week. And then finally, another one that you may well have that's on seen before is Fake or Fortune. And Fiona Bruce, who does a lot of Antiques Roadshow, takes her interest into all things old, into the art world, where she and an expert try to find out whether it's not always a painting, but this week it is a painting. Sometimes it's some other form of artwork. Whether it is in fact a fake or might be worth a fortune. Somebody brings them something which they have been led to believe could be valuable. And it's up to them to do some detective work of their own. And this time it's about a work supposed to be by Piet Mondrian. And it's owned by an American fellow who wants their help to find out whether indeed he's got a fake or a fortune. So those are the programmes that you might like to see this week. As I say, four of them are returning programmes. We've had several series, in fact, with Strictly, it's 20 years since that started. Can you believe it? I hope you find something there that you'll enjoy, and you can always let us know through our webpage if you have any comments to make or there's anything else you'd like to know.
Love is lovelier the second time around. Just as wonderful with both feet on the ground. It's that second time you hear your love song sung. Makes you think, perhaps, that love like youth is wasted on the young. Love's more comfortable the second time you fall, like a friendly home. Second time you call, who can say what brought us to this miracle we found? There are those who bet love comes but once, and yet I'm oh so glad we met the second time around. Who can say what brought us to this miracle we found? There are those who bet love comes but once, and yet I'm oh so glad we met the second time.
The Governor with Second Time Round in honour of the seniors' dating TV programme mentioned. That Sammy Khan song was voted Song of the Year in 1962, just in case you were wondering. Right. The last part of this week's news marathon now. Deep breath, Desney.
Work at a landmark in Goulston that was damaged in a landslip has been delayed for a second time. Cliff Hill and Beach Road have been closed since May to allow work at White Lion Steps. The area was originally due to reopen on September the 6th and then on September the 20th. But Councillor Graham Plant, who represents Goulston St Andrews at Norfolk County Council, has said the work will now continue into next week. In a post on Facebook on Wednesday, September the 18th, he said there was an issue connecting the back wall drain to the existing sewer. In a post on Facebook on Wednesday, September the 18th, he said there was an issue connecting the back wall drain to the existing sewer. The issue, which should be resolved by today or Thursday, September the 19th, has delayed the resurfacing and fencing works on Beach Road, meaning the County Council has had to extend the road closure for a further week. All works on Upper Level Cliff Road will be completed by the end of this week, and all traffic management will be removed. The purpose of the works is to restore and fully reopen White Lion Steps to the public. The steps, which connect Cliff Hill and Beach Road, have been partially blocked for several years due to a landslip in April 2012. They have been a prominent feature in the area, along with Admiral Duncan's water pipe, since the Napoleonic Wars. The footway, however, has been in a state of disrepair following the landslip, which narrowly missed a 12-year-old boy. Several diversion routes will remain in place until the work is finished. Traffic in Beach Road at the bottom of the steps is being diverted via Pier Walk, Key Road and Pier Gardens. Drivers in Cliff Hill and Upper Cliff Road at the top of the steps is diverted via Avondale Road, Lowestoft Road, Lower Cliff Road and Cliff Hill. A pedestrian diversion near White Lion Steps is via Beach Road, Pier Gardens, Lower Esplanade and the steps leading up to Cliff Hill. An ice cream van driver was caught nearly four times the drink drive limit after suspicious customers reported him to police. Radoslav Jarosiek, 45, was working near Great Yarmouth Seafront on a busy day last month when officers received tip-offs from members of the public that he seemed drunk and impaired. They tracked him on CCTV as he drove his Ford Transit van through the town and pulled him over on Victoria Road and breathalysed him. Jarosiek appeared at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court yesterday, where he pleaded guilty to drink driving. The court was told that Jarosiek was working in the town on August the 12th at the peak of the holiday season for Lamarty's Ice Cream, one of the biggest such firms in Norfolk. Customers reported him to the police because he seemed intoxicated and impaired while serving them. Officers told the court that once he had been located and stopped in his van at around 3:20 p.m, they smelt liquor and said he was unsteady on his feet. He was breathalysed and given a reading of 130 mg of alcohol, nearly four times the legal limit of 35 micrograms per 100 millilitres of breath. He was then taken in for questioning, where the lowest sample of his breath recording was 105 micrograms. Jarosiek of Albert Square in Yarmouth claimed he had only drank two pints of beer. The Pole, who used a Polish interpreter in court, told his probation officer that he never usually drinks and was only doing so on this occasion to cope with his depression because of his partner's recent miscarriage. He also said that in Poland it was quite usual to drink alcohol, and he did not realise the laws in the UK surrounding alcohol consumption while driving were so strong. Magistrates disqualified him from driving for 25 months. In addition, he received a 12-month community order, including 100 hours of unpaid work and 10 rehabilitation requirement days. He will also pay a total of £199 in court fees. Following the arrest, Lamarty's Ice Cream fired Jarosiek and he is still out of employment. A new lifeboat is set to be launched on the Norfolk coast this weekend, but in miniature. Merivale Model Village in Great Yarmouth is welcoming a new addition on Sunday, September the 22nd, with the arrival of a replica vessel and station of Caister Lifeboat. The model is a scale replica of the service's new 1.6 million Medina class boat. During the event, the lifeboat's crew, the life-size versions, that is, will be bringing the vessel down to the back of Merivale for photos of both the model and the vessel before officially opening the replica inside the village. Visitors will be able to put any coin in a slot, which will launch the vessel down a ramp and into a pond before it returns to the station. All proceeds will go to Case de Lifeboat, which is an independent lifeboat charity. The village's owners will also be donating £1 per person for every visitor who buys a ticket on the day. Sophie Parks, who owns and runs Merivale with Dean Gray, said, "It's nice for us to be able to help out." Models were made by a student at Arts University Bournemouth. In recent weeks, the crew of Caister Independent Lifeboat have been learning the ropes on their brand new Medina-class boat ahead of its official naming ceremony. It is expected the boat will soon be going on service. Miss Parks also reflected on the summer season at Merivale. "It was a long time coming, but it was okay in the end," she said. "The main 6 weeks were quite promising, but we've got some catching up to do." Merivale will stay open until the end of November, when it shuts for the winter, giving the owners time for renovation works before opening again for next year's February half term. Urgent safety inspections have been ordered at almost 40 more schools across Norfolk as concerns mount over whether ceilings could be at risk of collapse. Several are in local villages. A problem has been identified at another school, which meant one of its classrooms had to be shut on Tuesday, and dozens more schools have been added to a lengthening inspection list. Norfolk County Council started inspecting 23 schools at the beginning of the academic year after the Synergy Education Trust notified County Hall about issues involving lath and plaster ceilings at Reefham Primary and Fakenham Junior. This led to an emergency closure at Avenue Junior School after issues with the ceilings of 6 classrooms were discovered. And a classroom at Parkside School in Norwich was shut on Tuesday due to concerns. The problems affect schools where the ceilings contain plaster and lath, which can lose their structural integrity, particularly if they get wet. The council asked academies to inspect their school buildings and has now commissioned inspections of 37 more schools County Hall maintains across the county based on the age of the buildings. Penny Carpenter, Cabinet Member for Children's Services at Norfolk County Council, said the safety of children and staff is always our first priority. "So we are now checking any school where we think there could be this material, just to be on the safe side. We know that the material alone doesn't pose a risk, but we want to check for signs of any damage, as we know these ceilings can collapse if there are showing signs of wear and tear. If we find any damage that requires urgent repairs, then we will work with schools to minimise disruption and support their contingency planning. This is a similar approach to the one we used when RAC, reinforced autoclaved aerated concrete, issues were identified nationally. We're sorry for any inconvenience it might cause to children, parents and schools, but we believe it is the right approach to assure ourselves of the children's safety." An error meant county councillors did not get to debate problems with a government bankrolled deal to control spiralling spending on children with special educational needs, SEND. Angry opposition Norfolk County councillors say crucial information about progress on a safety valve agreement signed with the government in March last year was not presented to them. The safety valve deal saw County Hall get £70 million to cover the deficit it was accruing amid rising numbers of children needing specialist provision or extra support. Just a few months after the agreement was signed, the council told the Department for Education its scheme was off track and the agreement renegotiated. With the council anticipating a £115 million deficit in the school's budget by next March, the council has told schools it needs to adjust SEND top-up funding allocations over the next two terms to remain within budget. While the council is increasing the amount available from £30 million to £35 million, five multi-academy trusts warned the change could mean some schools have to slash budgets by up to £1 million. The council's Conservative cabinet considered the issues this month, where leaders warned Labour's plans to make private schools pay VAT on fees could push more children with educational needs into mainstream schools. But Labour councillors said other committees, including non-conservative councils, should also have had the chance to hear about the situation so they could question and challenge decisions. Labour group leader Steve Morphew asked the cross-party scrutiny committee to consider why annual and biannual reports on progress had not been presented to those committed, as had been agreed more than a year ago. Officers acknowledged a genuine error meant the deal's progress had not appeared on forward plans of those committees. They said the general election and the renegotiation of the safety valve deals had also interfered with the timing of presenting the latest information to committees. Mr. Morphew said, "If the safety valve agreement wasn't working, that's exactly what should have been reported back, and the fact that negotiations were going on." He added the VAT issue was irrelevant, as SEND children with education, health and care plans would be exempt. Officers said reporting procedures would be improved, while SEND issues will be the focus of a future scrutiny committee. Thousands of decorated plastic ducks will race through Great Yarmouth waterways this weekend. The annual Great Yarmouth Haven Rotary Club Duck Races returns to the town's seafront this Sunday, and here is everything you need to know. On Sunday, September the 22nd, six duck races will take place at Great Yarmouth Waterways. There will be three heats of the sponsored duck race and a grand final. The first heat will start at 1 p.m, followed by the second at 1:30. The first public race begins at 2 p.m. The third heat of the sponsored race will get underway at 2:30 p.m, before the second public race at 3 p.m. The final of the sponsored race will take place at around 3:30 p.m. You can buy a duck for £1 on the day to take part in the public race. The event is organised by the Great Yarmouth Haven Rotary Club and raises money for a variety of local charities and good causes. The event is sponsored and printed by SPP Digital, and pumps for the waterways have been supplied by Selwood Pumps. For both public races, first place will take home £200, with the runner-up winning £100, and third £50. The overall winner of the sponsored race will win £500. New firework events coming to Rollesby. A new fireworks event is launching in a Norfolk village on Bonfire Night, and there will be two displays. It will take place near Huggle Farm in Rollesby on Tuesday, November the 5th, 2024, with the exact location and timings yet to be announced. It has been organised by leading Norfolk fireworks company, Flashfix, and its founder, Des Fulcher, has more than 45 years of experience in putting on displays. Local charity Sunbeams will benefit from the event, and the Aylsham Scouts are helping out. There will also be a bonfire, and Redwell Brewing will be serving craft beers from their mobile bar in a converted fire engine. Visitors can also expect street food vendors, with options ranging from plant-based dishes to hog roast and local distillers. A DJ will entertain visitors between the two displays. Put the date in your diary, with tickets going on sale soon, and a Facebook page will be created. The RSPCA is appealing for help to find the owner of a royal python snake that was found on the side of a Norfolk road. The non-venomous reptile was found on Sunday, September the 15th, by a member of the public who spotted the animal on the side of New Road, Fritton. The metre-long snake wasn't moving, and the caller was able to confine the snake in a blanket and take it home before calling the RSPCA. They placed the snake inside a container which RSPCA animal rescue officer David Allen collected. He said, "We are so grateful to the member of the public who found the snake and kept it safe until I was able to collect." The snake was extremely cold and not moving when found, and I suspect it could have potentially been outside for over 24 hours before the member of the public discovered it. It is around a metre long and appears in good condition, so we suspect that the reptile might be an escaped pet rather than an abandonment. The snake is now being cared for by an exotics specialist, and if the owner is not found, then the pet will be rehomed. If anyone has any information regarding the snake or the owner, please contact the RSPCA Inspector Appeal Line on 0300 123 8018, quoting incident 0135 2734. The RSPCA said snakes are excellent escape artists, and will take the opportunity of a gap in an enclosure door or a loose-fitting lid to make a break for it. They need an enclosure which is kept secure and locked if necessary when unattended. Many of the snakes the charity receives calls about are considered escaped pets. The RSPCA urges prospective owners of reptiles, such as snakes, to thoroughly research the needs of the particular species and what is required in the care of the animal using expert sources. They say people should only consider keeping a snake if they can ensure they are fully able to provide for these needs. Without proper care, they can suffer from serious diseases, dehydration, injuries, and in severe cases, or if left untreated, they can eventually die. Businesses in Great Yarmouth have voted in favour of a tourism tax that will see them pay out almost £500,000 every year. The ballot has given the green light to the Visit Great Yarmouth Business Improvement District, GYTABIA bid, to continue its work for another 5 years, collecting the money from levy payers and additional income sources. The funds will be used to pay for the summer fireworks at Hemsby and Great Yarmouth, the Wheels Festival, Great Yarmouth Bowls Festival, the Visit Yarmouth Tourism website, and What's On and Short Breaks guides. Lyndon Bevan, Visit Great Yarmouth Chair, said, "It is wonderful that we now have certainty to continue with our objectives, which are to bring more people to enjoy and explore Great Yarmouth Resort and encourage people to stay longer, come back again and again, visiting more attractions and spending more with local businesses." Albert Jones, Managing Director of the Pleasure Beach, said, "The bid renewal is massive for Great Yarmouth, not only for the seafront, but all the catchment areas within it. This has enabled Great Yarmouth and areas to be at the forefront in the country when it comes to tourism and what it has to offer to make the town stand out from the rest. There have been concerns in the past that the money is spent on projects once funded by the Borough Council. But Mr. Jones said that without the bid, which was launched in 2014, Great Yarmouth would not be able to compete with other resorts. The money also funds facilities, maintenance and individual projects, including Philby in Bloom and Caister in Bloom, Great Yarmouth seafront decorative lighting and a CCTV maintenance. The Great Yarmouth area stretches from north of Hemsby down to Hopton and inland to the Broadland area, capturing Thurne and St Olives. Tourism is worth nearly £650 million to the Greater Yarmouth economy and provides more than 13,500 jobs. Last year, 7.5 million people visited the area.
Well, that's it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2024 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Don't forget you can contact us from our website at grapevinegy.org if you have any queries over our service. Your newsreader next week will be Andrew, so we hope for your company then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all of us here at Grapevine, stay safe and well, and bye for now.